All right, so I'm going to go through this quick. I would put myself at the end because I know that the previous presentations were going to be really good. But I'll be focusing on the continuous quality improvement piece. Let me just get, sorry that you have to go through all of these. So what the previous presenters focused on were three of the four letters that make up the acronym MAP. And so Paul talked about the mobilizing the community, so the M. Patrick talked about the planning, so in terms of strategic planning. We talked about partnerships and collaboration and the importance of that. I'm sorry, I know this is really distracting. Oh, we're almost there.
You're good.
Okay. So I'll be focusing on the action component of the MAP process. And so the MAP process has an action cycle as one of the phases of the process. And again, the idea, even though it's the sixth phase, that MAP is an iterative process. And so not to fixate on the fact that it's the last phase, but that there is this action cycle component. And the success of this action cycle is really contingent on the theories that we already talked about. So how well is the community mobilized? Were the strategic planning concepts really applied? Were all the pieces put together, or were they kind of compromised or undermined through, on the way? And how strong are these collaboratives and these partnerships, and how well are they developing over time? So another way to think about this action-oriented nature of the process, which isn't the most formal way of talking about MAP, but it's just another way of thinking about it, is in terms of continuous quality improvement. And I know that's kind of a buzzword nowadays. A lot of people like to talk about QI and what it means in terms of things like accreditation. And in thinking about MAP as a continuous quality improvement process, it's not just the action cycle, but all the phases before that action cycle piece that are really foundational in ensuring that the action cycle is successful in resulting in positive outcomes and improvements in health in the community. So there are a lot of definitions of CQI. In this one here, we'll see that a lot of the terminology that's used to describe a continuous quality improvement process uses the same words that we use to describe MAP. So we can see here that CQI is a structured process that involves participation from different segments of the system. It focuses on the customer, and so for us in public health, that's the community or the public at large. And then it's based on evaluation information, which then informs how the system can further improve. So for those of you who have looked at CQI and some of the literature, you probably recognize this man. This is Edward Deming, and he's the person who really popularized this concept of plan, do, study, act, or plan, do, check, act. And this is kind of an easy graphic to just wrap your head around kind of the basics of CQI, but it doesn't really get to the principles and the characteristics that underlie continuous quality improvement. And so a lot of people write about CQI, particularly in the healthcare and the business industry, and I've kind of just distilled some of the main pieces related to CQI. That it is a structured process, that in order to understand the way services or products are produced and the quality of them, it's important to understand the people and the processes that they engage in. CQI also focuses on systems and the idea that systems should have an aim or a goal or a vision, and that all those involved in a particular system, including those who typically work together and also those who can be considered competitors, all need to be involved in a continuous quality and improvement process. And that because there's a lot of interrelationships and these systems can look complex, management of these systems is really critical. The other notion behind CQI is that the customer focus and the scientific methods used really help inform what needs to be done, what needs to be improved, and also provides information to then say improvements have, yes, indeed, occurred within the system. And finally, what's very much implied in the PDSA cycle and in the name continuous quality improvement, that it is, in fact, continuous, that it doesn't have a distinct end point, and learning has to be continuous, and the application of these principles have to be ongoing. And so Edward Deming is quoted quite often. He actually has a group that calls themselves the Deming Disciples. And I've just included some quotes here that really kind of hit on the importance of doing continuous quality improvement. So if you can't describe what you're doing as a process, you don't know what you're actually doing. The performance of anyone is governed largely by the system that he or she works in. And I think public health people particularly like this one. In God we trust, all others bring data. And it's not necessary to change. Survival is not mandatory. And so these are just kind of things that people like to talk about the importance of doing continuous quality improvement, regardless of the types of services or products that you may be providing. Deming and others who write on continuous and quality improvement also talk about things that lead to system failures, so that loss of the collective aim, that collective vision. When components of the system become independent and competitive with each other and no longer work towards common goals, when information is no longer shared, and when learning within the system stops. And so CQI frameworks and models can help avoid some of these things that can lead to system failure. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this graphic. This is put out by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. And here you can see the PDSA cycle at the bottom. But what IHI has done is also talk about the real critical pieces that need to happen before actually engaging in a PDSA cycle. So they have here setting aims, trying to figure out what is the system trying to accomplish. Establishing measures, so how do we know change has actually occurred, so this notion of having scientific methods and data to then confirm improvements. The selection of alternatives and interventions that will be most likely to lead to improvements, and so this again is based on data collection, on scientific methods. And then only then, after an alternative or an intervention is selected, then planning out those details, implementing them, doing them, and studying them to then kind of put yourself into a cycle that leads to continuous improvement. And so if you look at the MAP model, you'll see some of these similar components. Those first five phases of MAP are really setting up to the action cycle, to that continuous quality improvement cycle, where communities convene, they're setting a common vision, they're collecting data to really understand where the current reality of their community is, how does it compare to that vision, to then identify the strategic issues that should be identified into reaching that vision, selecting goals and strategies, and trying to identify those interventions that will be most likely to succeed and result in improvements. And then only then to enter into an action cycle to say, these are the interventions, activities we identify that will address the needs of the community, that really capitalize on the assets already in the community. Let's go ahead and try to do some interventions, but the importance of evaluating them and then feeding that back into the cycle. So by looking at the IHI model and thinking about what's involved in the MAP process, I think we can begin to see that MAP does, in fact, really reflect the principles of CQI. So MAP itself provides a structured process, a framework for public health CQI, that it does involve the entire system, that this notion of system thinking and representation, that it is a community-owned process. And Heidi and I, if you've ever been to our trainings, we always say it's not buy-in, it's community ownership. So this notion that you're not selling anything, that together we're working together and we own this strategic planning process and the implementation of the work that we've done collectively. That it's data-driven, that it's informed by assessments and a comprehensive set of assessments. And, of course, that it's continuous, and I think we've talked about that a lot already, that it's not linear and that it's not an end in itself. And we often like to talk about MAP as not the destination but kind of the journey towards improving practice and the way that systems function and work together. So there are three ways in which improvements and learning in the MAP process is continuous. And so you can think of it just in terms of the action cycle, that plan, implement, evaluation, or the PDSA kind of way of thinking about it. And specific to an intervention, it could maybe be like a rapid cycle type thing, or it could just be revisiting how well a particular activity is occurring. We've also learned that communities have then kind of revisited the previous phase to say, well, our intervention reflects a strategy that we've selected based on the previous phases, but maybe we need to revise the strategy. Maybe the strategy isn't right, or perhaps we've achieved a goal that we've defined for ourselves. Let's try to achieve another goal or pick another strategy that we identified as a community that would be viable to improving public health. So that's the second way. And then the third way, which we're seeing more of in communities that are using the process, is to do another iteration of MAP. So to revisit how well are our partnerships formed, maybe use the partnership tool to then identify ways those collaborations can then improve, maybe revisit the vision, update data. And in the first iteration of MAP, data systems should have been put in place, so getting revised set of data, kind of current data, shouldn't be as rigorous as the first time around. And so second and third iterations of the MAP process tend to be a lot easier because foundational pieces have been put into place. But it's really now structuring practice around this way of strategic thinking, of having community ownership, and ultimately leading to, which was one of our taglines for MAP, a new way of doing business, a new way of doing business in public health. So I know this is very quick, but I think the point we're trying to hit is that MAP is very comprehensive. So it's not just a continuous quality improvement process, but you're combining it with these other theoretical foundations that have been proven effective, not just in public health, but also in other disciplines. And as a result of combining all of these theories and these concepts and practices under one solid framework, we've seen a lot of great benefits come about as a result of doing this process. And we don't say that it's something that's very easy you can do, you know, in a month or two. There is an investment that occurs, and because it's a comprehensive process, but the upfront investment results in real solid benefits to communities. And we've seen new data systems, efficiencies within the system, so reduction of duplication of services, identified gaps in services, overall system performance is improved, and we see this among communities that have used the performance standards tool to measure system capacity and can actually see improvements in system capacity. And also ability to understand the health department's assurance function. So the idea being that if a health department doesn't provide a service directly, they still have the responsibility of assuring someone in the system is providing that service. So understanding who that person is and having an agreement and working together to ultimately ensure that everyone in the community has access to all the essential public health services. Kind of more generally, some of the benefits of MAP of going through it and kind of embracing all these different theories is that there are stronger public health leaders, stronger partnerships, collaboratives, more public health advocates, which lead to a greater visibility for public health. The use of data, the use of working in collaboratives help identify and anticipate change so that we're not always being reactive, but an increased ability of systems being proactive to public health issues. And then overall stronger infrastructure, and ultimately the goal being healthier communities and better quality of life. So that was very quick. What the point we want to share with you is that it is a comprehensive process, and that what nature provides is a lot of technical assistance and resources around this, because we know that it can be difficult. And as Patrick had mentioned, that the how to adapt this process to tailor it to communities. And so what we do at Nature is provide that type of assistance to locals, regardless of whether or not MAP is initiated by the health department, even if it's initiated by other local groups or collaboratives that already exist, we provide those same types of services. So I really want to give us maybe 10 minutes for question and answer. I know that that's not a lot of time, but I'd just like to open it up to any questions that you might have. Yes?
This whole approach seems to presuppose a level of sophistication, both in terms of data and conceptual bases and rural communities, and I'm finding that that it's really difficult to impose a conceptual framework on them that has a lot of vocabulary that's alien.
Right. And that's not the first time we've heard those comments. And what we say, there's different approaches to thinking about that issue. One is to say you don't have to say, hey, everyone, let's do this great MAP process that has six phases that's endorsed by the national organizations. But someone who's trying to facilitate a community-oriented process, for them to know what the steps are. So MAP provides that framework to thinking through those steps and saying, okay, well, collaborations are important, and maybe a community is not ready to embark on a full-blown MAP process. But understanding some of the components that are necessary to then ready them to do something like MAP. So, for instance, building those relationships before saying, we have this great process, let's do it together as a task. So maybe time has to be put up front to develop those relationships, identify how communities can work together. The other way of, I'm trying to draw a blank, thinking about it is,
people that are there that they collaborate a lot together. So a lot of times this resonates with them. And you don't have to use this lexicon. We oftentimes want to share this theoretical underpinning just so that people understand that there is a shift in thinking. But that doesn't mean that you have to know all of this background theory to apply that. Many people sort of know this instinctually and never even heard of Deming, never even heard of a lot of the people that we talk about here. And then others appreciate understanding these theoretical frameworks to help them think deeper about it. So it's a variety of different levels, but it's sort of whatever resonates with each other. And we try to create the tools that make it very user-friendly so that there's some things that go deeper and some things that's a little bit more surface level, so it's geared towards people's different comfort levels with the information.
And I remember my second point that I completely blanked on. The other thing that we say is to don't be overwhelmed by doing the process perfectly. So there are a lot of communities that do say, you know, tailor it to some of the challenges they have. Maybe, for instance, we had a community who decided not to do the visioning piece for whatever reason. But in subsequent iterations, improvements can be made. So if a community isn't prepared to do kind of the full-blown perfect process, not that there is a perfect process, to recognize that kind of trying it out, there's lessons to be learned, and that future implementation of these steps can then get to kind of a better place or a better implementation of the process.
Any other questions? Learning the button to push and, you know, that kind of thing. But otherwise,
literally it's just you open an Excel file, you have to enable macros, and then you can work with it entirely. And there's the survey, and then it's connected to the analysis tool. So it just, you don't have to clean data or cut and paste, you just upload it. But yeah, free contact me, it's free, and we hope folks will use it.
So your question?
Well, I just moved to New University, so we're putting it together. I wish it was done today.
We have to fund it too.
Yeah, and once it gets a URL, we'll connect it to the MAP website as well so that people can access it either directly through the university or through NATO to get to the university. So.
I have a question too. Can this be used within an organization rather than?
Actually, the notes people or support teams, like
yeah.
you said.
Tell it what the group is. Yeah. And actually, if you sound familiar, this is like a almost the most simple version of doing a network analysis that you could do. If you hired an analyst to do it, you could do so much more, but then you're just basically hiring an analyst. But what we tried to do is we worked with folks to help develop it who gave us feedback who said these are the minimum questions and variables, you know, things that we want to see, and they said to us, we really don't want you to put it online because if you lose your grant, you'll lose the program. So we got a lot, we tried to get feedback from end users and just make it as simple as possible, and it's still a little complicated. So there's more if you know more about it.
And to follow up with that question, so I work at National Center for Health Statistics at CDC, and I just find this fascinating, because I was thinking, well, yeah, we could apply it within the agency, or we have different teams that work on different surveys. So I guess what's the minimum number that you really have to deal with? I guess theoretically it's two, because that network is three.
Yeah,
okay.
Actually, most people ask me what's the maximum. I have a simulation that we use in classroom exercises, and in that one we have 10, and we do a pretty extensive exercise with it. I don't really think there's a minimum, except that you won't get much information probably from Frey.
Right.
I don't really know the right.
I'm trying to think of the variability
that.
And the, you know, what, because I'm trying to strategize in terms of what we can use that for.
Yeah.
And I definitely see applications, but.
The thing people most struggle with when they start to use it is identifying who to include as a network partner in the group. So that's the question you're asking is the first one and probably the hardest to conceptualize and figure out.
But if it's what the community, if you're saying it's what the community wants and it's community driven, then it's the partnerships you think you have, right?
Well, or the MAP groups usually have defined list of partners.
Okay.
So yeah, it makes it a little different than the question you just asked. Yeah.
Okay.
And I watched this one of our groups unpack the partner diagram, and a lot of the value was in the dialogue. Like, what does this mean? I think that was the real value. The pictures, they kind of got it, but it was still really.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're looking at change over time,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because so what's the difference between now and where we were a year ago, and what's that mean, and where we want to go?
When I see all your scopes and everything, I think of system dynamics. I mean, how does this relate to that?
Done some system dynamics stuff. We don't use it's not as much. What I've done with system dynamics, like you know how input moves the parts. This is more like static one point in time for this. So it's less about a.
It's not about feedback loops. I mean, not you know the pictures aren't the static thing. I mean, you could you know maybe you see that in your system dynamics analysis, but that would be a good one. Kinds of causal loops.
Our time is up, but we will, if you want to ask more questions, we welcome them. I just want to thank everyone for attending our session today. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you so much. Thanks. One more meal or a
I'm sorry, I missed it. Your part, but I see. Yeah. So, you know, I'm different.